The reading is from James chapter 3, verses 1 to 12, and it's on page 289 of the New Testament section of the Good News Bibles. My brothers and sisters, not many of you should become teachers. As you know, we teachers will be judged with greater strictness than others. All of us often make mistakes, but if a person never makes a mistake in what he says, he is perfect and is also able to control his whole being. We put a bit into the mouth of a horse to make it obey us, and we are able to make it go where we want. Or think of a ship. Big as it is, and driven by such strong winds, it can be steered by a very small rudder, and it goes wherever the pilot wants it to go. So it is with the tongue. Small as it is, it can boast about great things. Just think how large a forest can be set on fire by a tiny flame. And the tongue is like a fire. It is a world of wrong, occupying its place in our bodies and spreading evil throughout our whole being. It sets on fire the entire course of our existence with the fire that comes to it from hell itself. Human beings can tame and have tamed all other creatures, wild animals and birds, reptiles and fish. But no one has ever been able to tame the tongue. It is evil and uncontrollable, full of deadly poison. We use it to give thanks to our Lord and Father, and also to curse other people who are created in the likeness of God. Words of thanksgiving and cursing pour out from the same mouth. My brothers and sisters, this should not happen. No spring of water pours out sweet water and bitter water from the same opening. A fig tree, my brothers and sisters, cannot bear olives. A grapevine cannot bear figs, nor can a salty spring produce sweet water.
Now, at the close of chapter 1 of the book of James, he touches on three topics: controlling the tongue, caring for those in need, and living a holy life. And in chapter 3, and those 12 verses that we actually read, that's when he's considering controlling the tongue. And it addresses an issue. The tongue is referred to in many places throughout the Bible, but the power of the tongue is also apparent to us from everyday life, from many aspects of life and in other writings. I'll give you a quote from Ecclesiasticus 28, verses 13 to 18. Curse the whisperer and the double-tongued, for such have destroyed many that were at peace. A backbiting tongue hath destroyed many and driven them from nation to nation. Strong cities hath it pulled down and overthrown the houses of great men. It hath cut in pieces the forces of people and undone strong nations. A backbiting tongue hath cast out virtuous women and deprived them of their labours. Whoso hearkeneth unto it shall never find rest, and shall never dwell quietly, neither shall he have a friend in whom he may repose. The stroke of the whip maketh marks in the flesh, but the stroke of the tongue breaketh the bones. Many have fallen by the edge of the sword, but not so many as have fallen by the edge of the tongue. And that quote refers mainly to the deliberate, unkind, or malicious use of the tongue, and we see it quite often, really. But careless words, even words spoken with good intent, can badly hurt other people if they have not been thought through. Far more often than we might think, perhaps silence is golden. And yet, we have to communicate with one another for all sorts of reasons, for practical reasons, to have fellowship. And we want to be encouraged by one another as well, do we not? We have to have agreements that are written down. And we've probably heard more than we'd like to hear about how long the agreements between the EU and its various members are. Absolutely huge numbers of pages of words in order to get things settled. The problems with the tongue are actually recorded in the Bible way back, in a way, back as far as Genesis 3. immediately after the disobedience of Adam and Eve. Adam seeks to blame Eve, and Eve to blame the serpent. Both Paul and Peter quote passages from the Psalms which refer to the tongue. There's one passage, I think it's Psalm 143, where the psalmist is talking about asking God to put a guard in front of his mouth so that he won't misspeak. Romans 3, verses 13 and 14, their words are full of deadly deceit. Wicked lies roll off their tongues, and dangerous threats like snakes poison from their lips. Their speech is filled with bitter curses. In 1 Peter 3, in verse 10, we read, "Whoever wants to enjoy life and wishes to see good times must keep from speaking evil and stop telling lies." The book of Proverbs often refers to the tongue, as does Ecclesiastes. Isaiah, you will remember, confesses to being a man of unclean lips. Now, although this passage in James is not that long, it does have a lot to say. But of course, in some ways, times have changed a bit. There's all sorts of ways in which we can say things now which you couldn't have in the times of the Bible. Mainly, I'm referring to social media, where people now, you don't just get bullied at school, apparently, you get bullied, you get cyber bullies. So people are bullied online. And if it does have the same effect, I am sure. I think people have a choice as to whether they want to use social media, but nevertheless, if they do, they shouldn't be treated in this fashion. But if we're to understand what James is saying and how, we need to look at it virtually verse by verse. And it's interesting the way that he introduces the whole topic. "Not many of you should presume to be teachers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly." And that's right in a way. We do want to be careful of what our teachers do. If we think back to our own times of childhood, what teachers said to us, I suppose principally in terms of encouraging us when we did well, or encouraging us that we really can do something we're finding hard, as opposed to discouraging or disparaging us because we couldn't do it, that would have made a lot of difference as to how we responded, wouldn't it? And teachers in a more modern context, the teaching role is spread across all sorts of people, both within the church and outside of the church. But each one has a responsibility in what they say. But not just in what they say, it's how you say it as well, because words can be said with an overtone which completely takes away the message or is opposed to it as well. And then in verse 2, James makes this amazing declaration. He says, "We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check." And that's quite a claim, isn't it? Then verses 3 to 5a, we see him describing how powerful the tongue is. Verses 5b to 6, that it's dangerous because of the effects that it has. It has, no doubt, caused wars and certainly caused the loss of life in the past. In verses 7 to 8, that it's untamable, that we seem to be able to control all sorts of things, we have such problems controlling our tongues at certain times, at least. And then verses 8 to 10, that it's often inconsistent. It's blessing one moment and cursing the next. In verse 11, that it pollutes not only our lives, but the lives of those who are affected by it. And in verse 12, perhaps a bit worrying in a way, that it's indicative of its owner. The way that we speak, what we say, how we say it, says something about us. So in verse 1, James is trying to draw the attention of his readers to a new topic. And of course, the teachers in the early church would in many ways have been the equivalent of the rabbi in the Jewish faith. The teacher would have commanded respect, had considerable responsibility, and needed to teach the truth and live the truth in his own life. James is warning that teachers in any context will be judged more strictly than their students. And saying that they should think very carefully before actually taking on the role. There was one comment that was made in one of the commentaries I read, whereby it said that vocational advisors used to say to ministers, if they were considering the ministry, if there's anything else that you can possibly do, I suggest you do it, because it would be so demanding. And of course, the main tool of the teacher in the first century was his tongue. There were no printing presses in the first century. But when we talk about using our tongue and we consider how we do it and what care we should take, we should apply that to the written word or the word that's online as well, because it can have exactly the same effect. And above all, the teacher themselves needed to control their tongue, needed to be very careful in the way in which they said things, and needed to be accurate, needed to say things in an appropriate manner. And the warning carries down into this generation as well. Even if we can't directly match a teacher onto just one role within our society. And then coming back to verse 2, James declares the tongue to be the key to holy living. It first says that we all regularly make mistakes in our own lives. And we know all too well that that is true. Sometimes it may be just a passing thought that we wish we hadn't had, but very often it might be a remark or might be something that we do as well. But then he goes on to say that if we could achieve that situation where we never misspoke, then we would be perfect, able to control ourselves. Because if we can control our speech, then surely we are able to control our actions as well. He doesn't list the ways that our words become sins of speech. He expects quite reasonably these readers are only too aware of when they have misspoken, of when they have said something that has hurt somebody, when they have said something that isn't true, that can have all sorts of effects. Rather, he's making this positive point. If we can control our tongue, if we can always say that encouraging word when we have the opportunity, then that will lead to us living a life which he regards as perfect. And James may well be thinking back to his experience of Jesus over many years. Jesus spoke a lot, particularly during his 3 years of ministry, but his words were always appropriate to the situation. They reflected always a concern for other people. And in 1 Peter 2, verse 22 to 23, we see that there was also a great deal of significance in the words that Jesus did and did not use. He committed no sin. No one ever heard a lie come from his lips. When he was insulted, he didn't reply by returning an insult. When he suffered, he didn't threaten people. He placed his hopes in God, the righteous judge. In verses 3 to 5a, James declares the power of the tongue, likening it first to a bridle to control a horse. Now, I've only once or twice ridden a horse, so I don't have personal experience of that, but I'm sure that a big horse does need some controlling, and that's the way in which it's done. And then we talk about a rudder as well. In the same way, we need to steer our tongues in the right direction. A rudder is often a very small component of a ship. I meant to look it up and see exactly how big it was on these huge ocean-going vessels, but perhaps that's something we can all do later, but I'm sure it's pretty small in comparison with the overall size. And if we don't exercise that, then the wind blows the ship all over the place. If we don't exercise control, we will find ourselves saying all sorts of things on instinct, and some at least of those things will not be the right thing. The tongue may be a small thing in size. It may not seem to be that significant, but just as a bridle or a rudder has a huge effect, so does what the tongue does as well. But the tongue can also be a great power for good. And James is by no means asking us to become Trappist monks, of course. Jesus' words from the cross resulted in one of his disciples taking his mother into his own home. A timely word of encouragement or praise can turn somebody's life around in ways that we perhaps might not imagine. And then in verses 5b and 6, James says the tongue isn't just powerful, it is dangerously powerful, can be very destructive when used wrongly. The election, I think it was, of 2001 recorded the lowest turnout since before any of us attained the right to actually vote. And that also coincided with a time when they started record parliamentary procedure, and you saw and heard how politicians often talk to each other. And that probably didn't enhance their status in our eyes, and probably still doesn't today. The media is often guilty of using its power to propagate rumours of one kind or another, of unrest. Things often seem to be much more newsworthy if they're controversial, if they're bad news. But James's own example that he gives in this passage is of fire, of how a spark can lead to a huge forest fire. And it's perhaps even more, we have a mental image of that when we've seen some of the pictures from Australia at the moment, of how a fire starts very easily, but it's very, very difficult to put it out. Even with our modern technology, we are virtually powerless to do anything about it. And there have been many examples of that in recent times. But just as a forest fire is uncontrollable, so are ill-spoken words. Someone has said, three things do not come back: the spent arrow, the spoken word, and the lost opportunity. But the tongue is also dangerous because it damages from a distance. And this is especially true in some circumstances, especially true in our day with something like social media, but also true, of course, with the printed word. No longer is every word said to somebody's face where we might think twice about it, but we can write it down. We can say it on social media, and we don't sometimes think carefully enough before we do just that. Rumours spread very rapidly, don't they? Just like a forest fire, if you like. And they're very difficult to put out. Very difficult to go back and correct things. And politicians have found that out as well. They often hear their own words being played back to them from several years earlier and are challenged on it. Someone has a chance to defend themselves from a physical attack, but to do so against a verbal attack is so much more difficult. And if they're not present, if perhaps it's some time before they even find out, then their reputation can be in tatters and they have no chance at all. And James, I think, perhaps just for emphasis, is talking about the tongue being set on fire by hell. Its effects are certainly felt in all our beings. And then in verses 7 to 8, James comes on to talk about taming the tongue. And he points out that all kinds of animals have been tamed by human beings. And indeed we have. Some have become domestic animals only. But even some of those who are regarded as wild animals, even the largest of animals, like the killer whale, the orca, for example, have been tamed. Whether we've been wise in attempt to do that is another matter, but we have succeeded. We've been able to do remarkable things around ferocious wild animals and birds, and yet the tongue is so difficult to tame. There's surely the clear hint here, though, that with God's help, we can control the tongue. There may be a hint of the power that was made visible in the tongues of fire at the time of Pentecost. In verses 9 and 10, James points out the inconsistent use made of the tongue, using it to praise and to curse in the context of a teacher, to encourage or to discourage. And whilst it's true that sometimes we may need to correct people, there are still ways of doing that. We don't need to do that publicly, we can do it privately. We don't need to do it in an offensive or combative way. We can just present the facts in a loving way. That may be more difficult, but it is possible. Maybe we should look more often for times when we can actually praise people. Not flatter them, that wouldn't be right either, but praise people for something they have, in fact, done well. Pay attention to all the people, perhaps behind the scenes, who do things for us, but we just take for granted. At the end of verse 8, he says the tongue's full of deadly poison, and perhaps we've become so used to irreverent and harshly critical language that we're no longer offended by it. James, however, is clearly shocked. "My brothers, this should not happen," he says. A more literal translation might be, "This is intrinsically not right." And the original language uses a word which apparently appears nowhere else within the New Testament at all. And in verse 11, James indicates the polluting character of the tongue. He says, "If sweet and bitter water mix, then the result is bitter." So it's not a question of playing off good use of the tongue against bad use of the tongue. If we have any bad use, it pollutes the whole thing, because people then possibly won't believe us. If we're lying very often, then even when we're telling the truth, they're probably unlikely to believe us. Analogous way, it's the harmful remarks that are often remembered far longer than the compliments, the insults rather than the praise. Just one harmful, ill-considered remark can spoil a friendship that might have been years in the making. And then finally in verse 12, James tells us that tongue is indicative of its owner. He's saying that actually our words reveal our inner selves. And that is so often true. Just as a grape only comes from a grapevine, so unloving speech only comes from an unloving heart. Despite the spectacular nature of the miracles he's performed, Jesus' real impact on the world around him was in what he said. In John 7, verse 46, we see the guards who had been sent to arrest Jesus returning to say, "Nobody has ever talked like this man." They recognized something from his speech that said something about himself. His words to those intent on stoning the woman caught in adultery literally saved her life. And so Jesus is the supreme example for our speech, the supreme example for the way that we respond to difficult situations. So what do we make of this passage? How do we apply it? First, I think we need to let what it's saying really sink in, to recognize in ourselves that what it says is true, that the tongue and how we use it say something about ourselves. And then if we catch ourselves or somebody challenges us on something we said, we need to think about that and see how the way that we consider ourselves and the way that we think needs to change. And secondly, let's just recognize that truth, that it reveals our inner selves, and be wary of that. Be conscious of it. And thirdly, let us see that learning to control our words is a powerful way of controlling our inner selves, powerful way of controlling what we actually do, how we spend our time, all sorts of things. And if we consider what the effect of failing to exercise control is, just recall those things. It's like a rider riding a horse and not holding the reins, letting the horse go where it wants, very unlikely to end up where he wants to be. Or it's like a ship and you just don't try and steer it at all. You're very unlikely, again, to end up where you want to be. And then finally, let's remember to ask God for help in controlling what we say. Because James says that the tongue cannot be controlled by human effort alone. It's something we need to bring to God. And finally, in some cases, perhaps we should remember that silence really is golden.